Now, we have featured plenty of contemporary Czech novelists in this program over the last decade, but we should spare a thought for their translators patiently working at home alone, struggling at a craft every bit as challenging as alchemy. In Czech Books this week, David Vaughan talks to a translator who has done more than any other to bring the middle and younger generation of Czech novelists to English-speaking readers.
I'm in one of my favorite Prague cafes, the Café Louvre in Národní třída, right in the center of Prague. And I'm delighted to be joined by Alex Zucker, who is somebody who has done an enormous amount to promote contemporary Czech writing in the English-speaking world, because he has translated many of the most interesting and popular contemporary Czech writers. He managed to come over from New York despite the weather. So, Alex, how does it feel to be back in Prague?
It's always a treat to be here. It feels very familiar.
And you've been coming here since the mid-1980s?
The first time I came was in spring, actually, 87. I was here for most of the summer of 1989, still before the end of communism, and then I moved here for 5 years in fall of 1990.
And how did your career as a translator from Czech into English begin?
Well, I would cite one man in particular, Peter Kusy, who recently passed away just a few weeks ago, actually, who was born here, emigrated with his parents in 38, I believe. They were Jewish, and they saw the writing on the wall, so they got out of town. And Peter was teaching Czech at Columbia University when I went there in fall of 88 to do a master's in international affairs. It was the only school in the country that had an international affairs program and somebody who taught Czech. And the very first class we had with Peter, he brought in a poem by Miroslav Holub and had us translate it, walked us through it. And at the time, he was translating Immortality by Kundera, Nesmrtelnost. So he was really the person who turned me on to the fact that there was such a thing as translation.
And you've been translating ever since. I know that a good few years ago, you undertook the mammoth task of translating Jáchym Topol's epic novel in Czech called Sestra. You translated it as City, Sister, Silver. I have no end of admiration for you for undertaking that translation, because it must have been so difficult.
It was hard. I just want to say where the title comes from. The thing about Sestra, because this will tell people a little bit about what it's like to translate, that Sestra in Czech means sister in the sense of family relation, but it also means a nurse, and it also means a nun. And it doesn't have all of those meanings in English. So we went through a whole bunch of alternative titles before I came up with this one. And Jáchym loved it because it reminded him of Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
The novel is epic in scale, isn't it? It takes you through the Velvet Revolution. It takes you through the Holocaust. Yeah. There's quite a lot, isn't there, for an American reader to digest in there?
Yes, that's true. Although it's interesting that you point out that it talks about the Holocaust. There's a whole chapter dedicated to it, chapter 6, which is, I think, in a way, the most powerful chapter of the book, although very funny, too, in a very dark way. But that chapter, which I thought was a part of the book that I thought would be most familiar to a U.S. audience, was virtually unmentioned by reviews in the U.S., the fact that there was a Holocaust chapter.
It also brings us to the more recent book by Jáchym Topol that you translated, The Devil's Workshop, which also returns to the Holocaust. It takes place partly in Terezín, the wartime ghetto north of Prague, and partly also in Belarus.
One of the main themes of the book is genocide, as actually it was in City, Sister, Silver. So the genocides that are compared and contrasted in this novel are the Holocaust, although in this book it's a couple generations down the line from the people who were either murdered or survived the Holocaust, these young people who come to Terezín in search of the past, but also to heal the trauma that they still feel in the present. But the second half of the book is about the fact that Belarus has more unmarked graves, mass graves, than any other country in Europe, and that people in Belarus were really massacred on a level almost higher than any other country in Europe, except maybe Poland.
The figures are absolutely staggering, aren't they? I mean, you're talking about a third of the population of the country.
A third of the population, yes. By both sides, meaning the Germans and the Russians. the second half of the book has the narrator coming into contact with this group of people who are trying to create an Auschwitz-style memorial in Belarus to draw tourists. But the way they want to do it is particularly sick. And that's all I'm going to say about it right now.
And so if you want to find out more, buy the book when it comes out next year. I've got my laptop here with me with your translation of The Devil's Workshop on it, so I'd be very grateful if you could read a short extract. This is actually from about a third of the way into the book.
So the setup here is this character named Sarah, who's from Sweden and whose grandparents died in the Holocaust, has come to Terezin and become a leading member of this healing community called the Communium, sort of a commune. And she's talking to the narrator about how she came to Eastern Europe and figure out where the real East was. The first town she's talking about is Košice, which is a town in the far eastern Slovakia. And I'll just take it from there. "My grandpa's from Košice," Sarah said. "All right then, Slovakia's got railroads and cell phones. I'll start there." And I set out for Košice, and I took a look around there at the stores and the cafes and the little shops on Main Street and the train station waiting rooms, where it's probably the same hard wooden seats as 70 years ago. I wanted to figure out what Eastern Europe really was, since we may look the same, but culturally we're different. So where is the real East, I wondered. The Slovaks all told me I'd stop too soon. They were Central Europe, not Eastern. Same as those stupid Czechs back there, sorry to say. Not to mention the Hungarians. They aren't even really in Europe. I wouldn't go there if I were you. They won't understand a word you say, they explained at the train station information window in Bratislava. Yes, they took pity on me, and when I insisted, they admitted that the real Eastern Europe was actually not far from Slovakia. Of course, I'd have to make it past the wolves and bears of Subcarpathian Rus. Ah, the Carpathians, Sarah said. So you look at the map and off you go. But then the people in Subcarpathian Rus get mad when you ask if they're in the East. They say that's nonsense and send you packing to the real East, to Galicia. But the locals there, like all the Poles, say, we're Europe, but not Eastern. We're the center of Central Europe. And they wave their hand. You want the East? You got to go to Ukraine. That's a bit of a way still, they spit bitterly and knowingly. Listen here, the East is poor and broken. People from the East go to the West to work, not the other way around, Sarah said, spitting too. The Ukrainians send you farther still, to Russia, but the Russians don't think they're in the East. To them that's an insult, seeing as they're the center of the entire civilized world, though they do allow that the true East might be in Siberia, right? So I ride all the way through Siberia, thousands of miles on the Trans-Siberian Railway, and at the end station in Vladivostok, I climb out all broken-boned, and the locals there tell me, East, Missy, are you out of your mind? Why, this is the West, the honest-to-God end of the West. This right here is the end of Europe.
Everything's relative.
Yes. She actually ends up all the way at the Sea of Japan.
And I'd like to talk to you about another contemporary Czech writer whom you've translated, a writer called Patrik Ožednik, who is astonishingly little known here within the Czech Republic itself, given how much his work has been translated.
I don't know exactly what the reasons for that are. It might have something to do with the fact that he, although he writes in Czech, he lives in France, not in Paris, but in a small town where he set up a small university.
It is an interesting phenomenon because Milan Kundera, who also lives in France, has a similar problem. And Ožednik tends to get labeled, doesn't he, as postmodern, with all the derogatory luggage that tends to go with that.
Yes, I know I've read interviews with Joachim Topol where he's talked about how he was kind of hoping that with the end of communism it would ease the burden on Czech writers as having to represent the nation and being the conscience of the nation, which is a long Czech tradition going back to the national revival, I guess. I know that Ožednik himself has a similar view that Czech critics feel that Czech literature means a very specific thing. It means representing Czech values, but also Czech sense of humor, and that on the one hand, if you are published abroad and successful there, it must mean that you're not adequately Czech, because if you were adequately Czech, then nobody would really understand your writing outside of the Czech Republic. But on the other hand, of course it means you're Czech because you're representing the best of Czech culture, and therefore you're successful abroad.
And you've translated two novels by Patrick Ožednik. Could you tell me a little bit about them?
Yeah, so I guess I would actually call them novellas. The first one I translated was called Case Closed. In Czech, it was called Ad Acta, which means to the archives. But it's a sort of takeoff on the detective genre with a lot of loose ends. In fact, I guess you could call the whole book is really just one giant ball of loose ends. There is a murder, there is a murder mystery, and other than that, there's a lot of commentary on Czechs and Czech culture and the way people treat each other and the stupidity of humankind, which is a major recurring theme in Ožednik's writing. The other book by him that I translated, called The Opportune Moment, 1855, takes the form of a series of entries in a diary by an Italian man who's on board a ship from Europe to Brazil in the mid-19th century to found a utopian colony.
One translation that you did a few years ago, which I didn't mention, is the novel by the young Czech writer Petra Hulová, which you translated into English as All This Belongs to Me. It's probably her best-known novel about three generations of a family in Mongolia. I do want to draw attention to this translation because, partly because you won an award for it, but also because I think it's one of the most interesting books to come out of the Czech Republic in the last 10 years.
In 2010, I did get the National Translation Award from the American Literary Translators Association for the book, which was amazing and a huge honor, and I was really grateful for that. The book was published by Northwestern University Press, and I would love to do another novel by her. I think the one I'd like to do is a one called Umělo hmotný tří pokoj, or Plastic Three Bedroom, which is told from the point of view of a young prostitute in Prague who's very savvy, very intelligent, and writes about issues of culture as well as her different kinds of clients that she gets in her profession.
I would like to ask you generally about the state of translation of Czech literature into English, because before we started recording this interview, you're pointing out the dire lack of not just translations of contemporary writing, Czech writing into English, but also the lack of translators.
There are about three or four books a year translated from Czech into English, and I know that I alone in the past 6 or 8 months have turned down two novels, and the big problem is that there aren't enough people who are native speakers of English who know Czech and of course are able and willing to translate. So three or four books a year, in my opinion, it's not enough given the level and amount of production coming out of the Czech Republic right now.
And this is a problem also partly in the English-speaking world, isn't it, that there isn't a sufficient desire to read literature from smaller languages?
I think the bigger challenge right now for people who translate and people who are interested in translation is to make the books more visible, not necessarily to just make more of them. I know this kind of contradicts what I just said, but I think certain languages certainly need more representation. But beyond that is the challenge of how do you make translations more visible and publicize them more.
And to end with, what are you working on right now?
So right now I'm translating a Czech classic from 1931 called Markéta Lazarová, which was written by Vladislav Vančura. It's coming along very slowly. That's all I can say about it right now.
Well, Alex, good luck with that. And I hope that we'll have a chance to talk again before too long and that you manage to get back home to New York before the next bout of bad weather hits.
Thank you very much, David.